Today's episode is a little heavier. We're going to talk about divorce. I'm bringing an attorney, Rebecca Neal, who is in the family law space and works with people all the time who were thinking that maybe it's time that their marriage ends. And she kind of guides them through that process of what happens next. When I think about surfing the quicksand, it's about helping people get unstuck, and sometimes marriage is one of those things where people are feeling stuck. Now, that doesn't mean all marriages that feel stuck end in divorce, and we're going to talk about that here. But what it does mean is maybe there are things holding you back from what you think the divorce process means and is going to mean for your future. And maybe that's part of getting you unstuck and thinking about your future too. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand. Have you been hearing me talk about the Clever Girl Organizing Challenge and wondering if 2026 is your year to join? Well, now's your chance to find out. Registration is now open through January 4th, 2026. We spend 11 weeks together, and I give you an assignment every week. We're going to work on all the spaces and categories in your home that are kind of causing some chaos. Your kitchen, paperwork, clothes, kids' toys, all the different spaces that really can get out of control, whether it's around clutter or your systems, and you just feel overwhelmed and don't know where to start. You're going to start with me. You'll be part of an 11-week program with weekly assignments, an exclusive supportive Facebook group community where I give you much more content on helping us understand and getting to the bottom of what you own, why you own it, and where you keep the keepers. I'm all about helping you understand the psychological and emotional barriers that have been getting in your way and helping you figure out ways to tackle that. Head over to clevergirlorganizing.com for you to find out more about the 2026 Clever Girl Organizing Challenge and sign up by January 4th. See you there. I don't know if you've heard the term menovorce, but it's a combination of menopause, divorce, and it's trending. I'm going to talk today about the divorce rate and divorce and marriage dissolution and custody and families and all really heavy things because it turns out that it's on a lot of people's minds, and I think those are the kinds of conversations that I bring to Surfing the Quicksand. I want to start with a couple of statistics that I found, and of course, I'll cite these in the show notes. The first is that even though divorce rate is declining in the United States, it's actually increasing in the population of adults 50 and over, where in 1990, one out of 10 divorces were for people 50 and over. Now that statistic is more like one in four as of 2019. And that came from a study from Bowling Green State University's National Center for Family and Marriage Research. Another study out of the UK, the Family Law Menopause Project, cites that 7 in 10 women blame perimenopause or menopause for the breakdown of their marriage. Both of those are really heavy. And both of those really cite just how much you're seeing of people talking about this. And it's not really a surprise, right? We see people struggling at this age and in this phase with all sorts of things. And it doesn't surprise me at all that marriage might be on the top of the list of where people might struggle. So, because of this, today I am bringing attorney Rebecca Neal. Rebecca is a family law and custody and estate planning attorney, and she's been working with people and advocating for her clients in the courtroom and in the conference rooms for almost 20 years. She works in her own practice just outside of Boston, and her work around family law and mediation and helping people through this most critical life transition that impacts individuals and families is really her life's work. And I'm excited to talk with her today to maybe think through some myths and assumptions that exist in our minds when we think about divorce. I want to remind everybody that Surfing the Quicksand is entertainment media, and nothing that is shared today should be considered legal advice.
Thanks for having me, Kathy.
I'm so excited to have you on this. And you were really, when I was thinking about this podcast and thinking about what are the things that people might care about, you were top of my list because I know how big of a problem this has seemed to expand. And even if it's not leading divorce, it's people who are in kind of marriage crisis and identity crisis and struggling through so many different things. In fact, I saw recently a kind of a social media reel, a video of a man kind of speaking to other men saying like, "Hey, if you don't realize what's going on here, you're going to end up cast aside in all of this." It was really a very interesting talk, and it was that call to action of saying, you know, there's a lot going on here for women in this phase, and sometimes what's going on in a marriage is just exacerbating that. So thank you for being here. Thanks for being open with your experience in working with families and working with adults and especially women as they're going through this phase.
Sure, I'm happy to help. I feel like I have a responsibility to help educate people that a good divorce is possible and it can be a good thing. It's not always something to be sad about. It's can be very liberating for people. I'm not going around saying everybody should get a divorce, but you know, it can be a big solution to something that's been weighing someone down for a long time.
And I agree. I'm not here to encourage people to get divorced. And you know, I talk about this, right? The whole purpose of Surfing the Quicksand is about helping women get unstuck. And that can happen across a number of fronts where you are stuck. And sometimes unstuck is just like a little less stuck, right? And sometimes what's stuck over here, you're going to shift somewhere else. So this isn't like, yay, everybody, let's pursue divorce. I hope nobody's thinking that I'm a cheerleader squad for that. But I do think sometimes people stay stuck out of ignorance or assumption or fear, and they are trading off so many negatives that they've imagined in their mind over the negative staying where they're at.
Absolutely.
So let's talk first about you
Sure.
and kind of your how you got into this space in the first place and the kind of work that keeps you passionate here.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'll be honest, I never thought I would be a divorce lawyer. It's not why I went to law school at all. I went to law school to be a consumer advocate and work in public interest law. But it turns out I had all of those dream jobs that I wanted, and they were really boring. I really wanted to work with people and I wanted to be in court and I wanted to be advocating for people. And I happened to get a job working in a family law firm. And I just loved all the interaction with people, the solving real problems for real people at very immediate, rewarding work. I'm in court every week. I'm, you know, talking to people, different people twice a day. I just love working with people, so this was a natural fit. And I love untangling these challenges. And the more every year that I do it, the more solutions I can help my clients come up with because I see more and more family situations. Because no two families are the same, and so no two solutions are going to be the same, even though the problem is the same. Like I see the problem come up all the time, over and over again. And then because of changing economic situations, change a different family, you know, we're going to have a different solution to that same problem.
So you say the problem comes up over and over again. What are the most kind of common problems that people are showing up when they're calling or they're emailing or they're setting up a consultation with you? Like, what's the most common problems you're hearing over and over again?
Well, first of all, what does a good parenting schedule look like? So for parents, you know, what's going to work well for their kids? And you know, we can base this on a general schedule, and then make it tailored specifically to those kids. And then the second thing is if they own a home together and they've been living there, it's called the marital home. What are you going to do with it? You know, and we're presented with all sorts of options and ways to resolve that question. Okay. And then, you know, at one point it was a lot easier. Interest rates were lower. Now interest rates are higher. Nobody wants to refinance that mortgage. And so we talk about creative solutions.
So both cases, so parenting and marital home, both feel like what happens after the divorce, or what happens in the process of breaking what we have today and having what comes next. Let's first talk. I definitely want to talk about parenting and children and co-parenting and everything, and I want to make sure we make good time for that. So I want to shift first to talking just in general about when people are thinking about divorce. What are some of the things that are on their minds around what it's gonna take or what the process is gonna look like potentially?
Well, a lot of people don't have a good idea of what the process could be, right? They don't have an understanding that most divorces don't look like a knockdown, drag out legal battle in the courts. Okay. Every state now has new no-fault divorces. And so that means you don't have to prove anything in court except that the marriage is broken down, which is really good because it leads to people being able to have settlements. People are afraid that this is going to drag out. It's going to cost them a lot of money, right? They're afraid that they can't afford to get divorced. And sometimes they think that that's because they can't afford a lawyer. And sometimes they're afraid that they can't afford to buy out the other spouse from the marital home, or they're afraid that their assets are going to be cut in half and they're going to be left destitute. It's safe to say that nobody's going to be left destitute, and that we find solutions, creative solutions for buying out the marital home if it's possible, and that people may be surprised by what they learn when they do talk to somebody who does this day in and day out about what's possible. And also, as for being able to afford a lawyer, there are also all sorts of solutions for lowering your legal fees. And sometimes I am not the most expensive thing that comes out of a divorce. Okay. And I would say, I swear I'm not just selling my services, but it's probably more expensive to not hire an attorney. Because if you think about what you're entitled to in your asset division or with your support, if you're not maximizing what you're entitled to, then you're losing a lot. You're leaving a lot on the table. And if you don't have an attorney advising you about those things, then it's very possible that you're going to be leaving a lot on the table. Or, oh my gosh, or you're downloaded some separation agreement from the internet. Or it's like 3 pages long and you think you covered everything. You submit that, and for some reason, the court approves it, but it has so much ambiguity that nobody really has their expectations managed. And that, the parenting schedule's all over the place, the asset division is too confusing to follow. And then it just invites arguments. And when the arguments come up, then you're going to hire an attorney to resolve the arguments. So do it right the first time.
If it feels a little bit like a you get what you pay for scenario in that case,
To some extent, yes.
but the idea of like anything else, when you're working with a professional who knows what they're doing and they know the landscape and they know the possibilities and they can inform you and they can help you weigh informed decisions, versus the well, and now I'm gonna have to pay for an attorney anyway to untangle a mess that we didn't intend on and we don't seem to get back out of on our own by downloading another document from the internet. I think that that's a really interesting point that and I just love how you framed it, right? Like sometimes the attorney is actually not the most expensive part of getting divorced.
Yeah, and if you delay speaking with an attorney, you might be actually, again, costing yourself money because you're proceeding on an assumption that just isn't true in your state. Like if you're using ChatGPT for your legal advice, maybe it has amalgamated the laws across, 3 different states, and it's just not valid for your state's laws. And you don't want to be making financial commitments based on unfounded information.
That is interesting. And of course, we are all trained to do a lot more DIY research on our own and throw something to Google or throw something into the AI of our choice these days. But like with everything else, right, you need to talk to somebody and you need to validate and you need to verify, wait, is that my state? Is that me? Is that my situation? And so even being able to talk to an advisor in that space alone can be a value.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I want to talk about, we've already started talk about like the assumptions and kind of myths of just money being a big factor, right? It's gee, it feels more expensive to get divorced than it does to stay married, right? Like, that feels like a statement that people would make. And I know we're going to talk about children too, but are there other kind of assumptions or processes that people are concerned about or naive to or ignorant about that you say, oh, this is an area I educate people on as well?
So, people are really afraid of the stigma. Like, some people still whisper the word divorce. The fact is that a lot of people get divorced, and there is still a stigma about it. But honestly, at this point, sometimes I say to people, congratulations on your divorce, because it is can be a liberating thing. And so we talk about, what are the benefits, and maybe those are going to outweigh any preconceived notions about what the stigma might be. And we talk about phrasing it in terms of a good divorce. You can have a good divorce. What does a good divorce look like? Well, it's a divorce where people are amicable, they're communicative, particularly in the case where you do have children together and you have to co-parent. You use terms, instead of using terms like my ex, you would say my former husband, or call them by their name. Or when you have kids, you could say, if you're in front of the kids, don't call them your ex, call them their dad. My kid's dad said this, or my kid's dad is picking them up. There's so many different ways to use words, and communicate that this is a good divorce. These are people who are communicating. These are people who might have had conflict in the past, but are working on communicating well now and into the future.
I love that. And listen, nobody ever stood in front of their friends and family at an altar to get married and said, gosh, I hope this ends someday, right?
Oh,
That
yeah.
no, everybody went into their marriage thinking the best for their future together. And the idea that you can actually go into a divorce thinking the best for each other as well is, that's a really peaceful way of thinking about this lifetime that we often build with other people, again, especially when there's co-parenting involved, because co-parenting isn't just until your kid's 18 or 21, right? Co-parenting is forever, when you're talking about family dynamics. Let's shift a little bit and talk about kind of the parent identity in this process and what some of the things are that you're talking to people about, what they're concerned about, and the kinds of work you help build for them in this process.
Sure. I mean, something that I do is, okay, so, well, with parents, some people are approaching it like there's no way I'm going to have two different households. And that's one of the first hurdles that they have to get over, is envisioning what's that going to look like for the kids, and kind of approaching it from their perspective and thinking about what works best for them. And some parents just cannot get out of that perspective of what's best for me. But what one thing that I try to do most with my clients is think about what's going to work best for them within the framework of your life, and a lot of times that does result in people thinking about a custody schedule that is a 50-50 custody schedule, because they want the kids to maintain contact with the other parent. And sometimes that means that the parent who's getting bought out of the marital home is more likely to have an extended buyout period, because they want their kids to have the stability of remaining in the marital home. It's incredibly common. And the truth is that 50% of divorces with children have amicable relationships. They're cooperative, they respect each other's relationships with the children, they use positive language about the other person, they keep their arguments between each other. They do not involve the children in disagreements that they have. And, kids are resilient, and parents can model this kind of good communication for them. It's pretty healthy to have a good co-parenting relationship in front of your children. It shows that you can interact with people that you are not in that relation, in a romantic relationship with. You can still cooperate with people on a group project, right? It
I love that. It's a group project, right? The
is.
family's a group project. I think about, when I was young, I didn't like for a lot of people, I didn't know a lot of people who were in divorced households or came from divorced households. And I remember as I, got older, I got to college and I was exposed to more and with different situations around how they grew up, whether it's around, oh, my parents were amicable or they weren't, or we had unusual or not unusual, but we had people had different kinds of custody arrangements that they were involved with. And so that idea that there are other ways of thinking about it besides just like what you might think about from, one family who's done it one way, or this is how you grew up if you came from a home with divorce as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think people like to talk about drama. And so you hear these dramatic stories about people being jerks to each other, about people doing extreme and outrageous things, but people don't talk about the quiet, amicable work that's hard work of co-parenting. Sometimes you have to make a choice every single day to not answer that text right away, to give the co-parent the benefit of the doubt that maybe they're in a hurry and they didn't mean to sound so grumpy in that text message. Maybe they did, but you're just going to take a deep breath because you're like, what's the point in getting into an argument with this person over their tone, right? And just kind of taking the high road, unfortunately, day after day, but you're building your family. It's like having family dinners. You sit down to family dinner every night, and even though it's mundane, the sum total of it all builds your family unit to be stronger. And so the sum total of making these small decisions together as a co-parenting unit is going to build your family as well. And so that when there's a big problem or a big decision that you guys have to tackle, where's the kid going to college, or they're in crisis and you have to make decisions about medical stuff, then you're equipped to be able to make those decisions together.
That all sounds amazing, and even like I feel like the word co-parent isn't a word that was around 20 years
Yeah.
ago, but I love that it is kind of the model term that we use for like doing it in the best way possible, and sometimes that's you remember those 50% of divorces end amicably. Sometimes you're not in that 50%, or people are not in that
Right.
50%. Can you talk a little bit around that and what you think a role you've been able to play to help people navigate through the not so amicable parts looks like?
Absolutely, because a large part of my practice is helping survivors of domestic violence. And so, obviously, their partner is not going to be cooperative in the divorce process. And a lot of times people say, well, he never hit me. And that may be true, but it doesn't mean that the person wasn't abusive. There's all sorts of different kinds of abuse, like financial abuse, where it keeps the finances secret and then gives you an allowance for the grocery money or something like that. And all these things accumulate, and they really have an effect on somebody's emotional well-being, right? And their ability to make decisions on their own and feel like they're making the right decisions, right? So I do my best to make sure that my clients have agency, and I explain to them their options and they make a decision. Because if they're in a really terrible relationship where their judgment has been questioned throughout the marriage, or they've been gaslit, or they've been put down, they're going to have a hard time making those decisions. So I do my best to explain all of their options. And honestly, you're not going to have an amicable divorce, at least at first, with those folks who aren't coming to the table. It takes two to tango, right? And so we do have to file contested divorces. And drag them to the table, unfortunately. But even when you do file a contested divorce, there's always space to settle. Even with those controlling and abusive spouses, we can still settle. Or even if they're not abusive, I'm not going to say all difficult spouses are abusive, because they're not, right? You have a whole range of problematic behaviors why somebody is not going to come to the table.
Sure.
Okay. But we have a whole range of tools available as lawyers to get them to the table. And if they're not going to get there, to get a result, whether they're there or not.
So I appreciate the kind of that reality, right? That sometimes people are in a situation that isn't, there's likely not a really great outcome out of here. The great outcome is that we're coming out of this marriage.
Yes,
And
the great outcome is freedom, right? Yeah.
And again, not even necessarily in an abusive or controlling situation, but for some people, the kind of the marriage that they're in it is the single most weighed down headline of their life, and the freedom to start over, the freedom to think differently or to move forward through this life differently, comes with the stigma that you mentioned, right? Is some of that, maybe some shame, maybe some fear, and all of that. And then you add, and it's going to be a difficult process to get them to the table, and it's going to be difficult to get to a settlement. Just feels really heavy.
Yes, but life is long. If you think about life as long, I mean, women in their 50s, what? They got 40 years left. Like, do you in your 80s, do you want to be stuck at home with that person? And if you think about it like that, you think about if you have kids, do you want your kids to be looking at your relationship, your problematic relationship, as the only example of marriage that they have? Like, I have a client who whose dysfunctional parents stayed married, presumably for the kids, and then that person got married and repeated the same mistake like that her, their parents made. And you know, she kind of lamented, like, I wonder, did they stay together for me, and was that worth it? But even at 50, life is long and we can build a new chapter.
So I love this. And again, it's about when I think about getting women unstuck, it's unstuck why? Why? Because the life is still long, because there's still a lot left to do, and there's a lot left to live in a very different way, in a happier, saner, more comfortable way than they might be doing now. I also know that sometimes people come and they start thinking about divorce, or they're going through therapy and counseling or mediation, and they actually come to a spot where, like, oh, actually, this was a bad patch, or actually, this was a communication issue, and we can go through it in a different way, or we can figure things out. Do you see that? Do you see where, and not necessarily in your practice, but have you seen
Oh,
where people
yeah.
are like, yeah,
I see it in
talk
my
about that.
practice.
Yeah, tell
Yes.
me
I
about
mean,
that.
I withdraw a divorce at least once a year that somebody's hired me to file, and then we withdraw it because they've reconciled. It happens. And just because you talk to a divorce attorney, first of all, I don't tell anybody you've talked to me. That's totally confidential, right? I practice in a small town. I know a lot about a lot of people, and nobody knows that I know all these things. And if I see you on the street, I'm going to treat you just like a stranger, right? Unless you say hi to me. So, talking to a divorce attorney does not mean you're going to get divorced, but it does give you the knowledge that you need to make an informed decision, because knowledge is power, right? And you're a grown up who can weigh the options and say, this is one path. This is another path, and I can choose which one is going to work better for me.
So I love that, because again, we're not even talking about like, hey, did you know that divorce might be an option for you? It's like, hey, did you know that just talking to someone is an option for you? And you may come out of that with a reframing of your situation, or with an understanding of different tools, or with an openness to different paths that you might take, or with the be like, oh my gosh, you know what? Things got so bad that I went and talked to Rebecca. Maybe I actually have to have a different conversation with my spouse. Right. And it may be the call to action around a different approach to communication and a different approach to partnering at that point.
Oh, absolutely. Because when you know that the other option is like, this is what the parenting plan could look like, or this is what, trying to think of like, oh, this is what kind of we could talk about, like, what would a healthy financial communication look like? You can then start envisioning that in your marriage and say, you know, we should have a healthier division of responsibilities when it comes to the kids. Or I really should be more involved in the financial decisions and aware of what's going on. And if your partner is responsive, that is really amazing, right? And if that is what's why you're stuck, one of the things that's been sticking for you, and your partner can be responsive, then you're moving forward in a really good way.
I love that, right? So again, it's like thinking about what are the things that kind of got you to say, I think my marriage is over, or I think I need, I'm had it up to here and I see no other way out. Even the process of talking to somebody about this can say, you know what, actually, let me tell you what I'm hearing. And here are some other people I've met in your situation, some things they've tried, right? You may be very well in that situation, which is not to say that you're a couples therapist, though
No.
I'm sure there's aspects where people feel like it's a therapy session. I get that with organizing all the time, right? Where like people are like, okay, yep, I know it feels like therapy, but not a therapist. But the idea of saying, here's your perspective, and I know this is the lens you have right now. Sounds like this is really the issue for you. Tell me about the conversations you've had. Tell me what you've tried so far, right? Like even being able to do that helps people kind of just back down off a ledge a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if they do approach their spouse about those things and their spouse is not responsive, they can move on. If they feel divorce is their better option, they move on to divorce knowing that they tried what they could try and it didn't work, which is gives them a lot of peace of mind. Personally, I'm divorced and we were in couples counseling for 5 years before. Heck, we were probably in couples counseling for that long because I knew how good I had it, right? Because I see like some of the worst relationships, right, in my job. And I was like, oh, it's not that bad. You know,
Wow, yeah,
let's
yes.
fix this. Let's see if we can fix this. And so I think at year four, we decided to divorce and our marriage counseling turned into co-parent counseling, basically being able to learn how to enter into this new relationship together.
And that was year four of therapy, not year four of your marriage. Yeah, no.
Right. Yeah. No, we'd been married. I don't know. I
A long
don't
time.
know.
Long enough to have kids that are part of co-parenting conversations.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But right. So I love that perspective of like, oh, I've seen it really bad and I know mine isn't that bad. So they are supposed to be that. Because I think even not just as a family attorney, but people who are in right are like, oh, I look at our friend's marriage. We're not that bad. We're not that bad. So we must not be, I must be fine. Or it must be my fault, or I must just have to work harder or try harder. Sometimes, they say comparison is the thief of joy. And I think there's more to that phrase than that. But the idea of just sometimes it actually can just be a disservice in the opposite way. Like, oh, I'm
Oh.
not that bad, so I must be fine. Maybe you're not fine.
Absolutely. That was me that I was talking about, who was looking 40 years into the future saying, is this what I want for myself in 40 years? I'm hoping that I get to live to be 80. And that's not what I wanted. And I don't think that's what my spouse at the time wanted either. It was just too hard. We are happily divorced,
I love that.
working well together as co-parents. So,
And that's hard work. And like you said, that's daily work. That's every text. That's whatever it is, right? It's not light and it's not autopilot. Sometimes it's probably just as hard as making the marriage work as making the divorce and the co-parenting work. That's the
is
flip
not
side.
as hard as making the marriage work. I'm going to assure you on that one.
That's good to hear.
So common to hear
That's so
people
good.
come into my office and
Gosh.
say, I know this is going to be hard, but it's a different hard than what I'm coming from. And I'm ready for this different heart. I'd rather have that than what I'm going through now.
I love that. And thank you for sharing your personal story and your own experience. I'm sure that it gives even like an extra dose of credibility when you're working with clients who are like, listen, I've literally been where you are. I've literally been, talking, I don't know if you represent yourself, but nonetheless, like the idea of saying, oh, I'm facing hard decisions and I've done that too. I love that.
I will tell you, I did hire my own lawyer. All right, because a lawyer who represents themselves has a fool for a client. But also, even I recognize how important it is to get another person's expertise on my own case, right? So it's not because I couldn't handle this case. It's because I didn't have the perspective that I would need in order to advocate adequately for myself. And so I have like these really smart clients who probably would do an amazing job advocating for someone else. But when it's your life, it is so hard. It's like, it's so hard, right? Because it's your life, you know? But when I'm advocating for somebody else, I can push a little bit harder on their behalf than they would feel comfortable with and get a better result. Also because I know, you know, where to push, you know, what's appropriate and things like that. But also it gives them peace of mind knowing that the person standing next to them in court has done this a lot before.
And they're 100% focused on you and your outcome, right? And that can be you. It's hard for you, probably hard for you to do on your own to say, "Oh, I'm 100% committed to me." Oh, but also my kids, right? Like, there's stuff in the mix there. So I love hearing that you invested in yourself in that way and a very smart, right?
I didn't want to leave money on the table.
No, that's also true, right? Right? You know, there are lots of concerns that somebody has in going through it, and whether that's money or custody or something about your future security or your future happiness, making sure that somebody who knows what they're doing has that as their top goal for you, is so important. Before we wrap up, I want to ask something particular because I know that you also get involved in mediation.
Sure. Yes, I'm a
And
mediator.
I don't know that people necessarily know what that is. So can you share a little bit more about that?
Sure, absolutely. So a mediator doesn't have to be a lawyer. In a divorce context, I find it really helpful that they're also a lawyer. But a mediator is a neutral third party. Their job is to get the two or however many people are at the table to come to an agreement or to just understand what issues are still in contention. In a divorce situation, if you hire a mediator, they're going to expect you to come and discuss what it is that you want and why you want that. All right. Their job is to get you to open up more and communicate with your spouse about why you want the result you want. And they will help you brainstorm different ideas, different solutions, and come to an agreement. But that mediator is not going to give you legal advice. They're going to give you legal information. So they can tell you whether they think your agreement will pass muster with the court, but they can't tell you whether one of the clients, you know, if the client asks me, is this a good idea? Should I do this? I cannot say whether they can do it, whether it's a good idea for them to do it. I would say that's a question for your lawyer. And so, yes, hiring a mediator can save you money because it avoids litigation. And it's a really good idea if you're having trouble coming to an agreement on specific issues that feel intractable, but particularly where you've agreed on some other things with your spouse. So you know that there's like a space for you guys to communicate and come together, but maybe you just need somebody to help you explode out the options so that you can kind of, you know, craft your own solution. Mediation is a really great idea. And you're going to each have your own lawyers who are going to advise you about how to reach your goals, what kind of proposal to be setting up, and then to review the final separation agreement before you finally sign it and submit it to the court.
That's really helpful. And something for me that I learned in there is like the idea like, oh, you're going to have a mediator, but you also have attorneys. This isn't in lieu of having attorneys, and it's not in lieu of something else. And again, like it's not like just a step above getting something off the internet, right? It's around a very specific way to interact when you both feel like, listen, we're close on this, or we've worked out so much other sticky stuff that I think if we had somebody guiding us through this process rather than a judge telling us what this process should be, that we could come out with a better outcome for both of us. So it's just, again, just like a sounds like a very helpful tool to add to the process to get closer to an amicable outcome.
Absolutely. And it helps flex those communication muscles. I think that as a society, we've kind of lost a little bit of the ability to have good conflict without having like slashed earth, you know, techniques here. And when you're in what we would call a safe space with a mediator, in a room where, somebody's going to help you help facilitate that disagreement and that problem solving, you can practice what that feels like to be uncomfortable and vulnerable about why you feel a certain way, why you want a certain thing. And then have this person who's at odds with you hear what you're saying and say, "Oh, I didn't think about it that way." Or, "Oh, well, if that's all you're looking for, then maybe we could solve it this way." It's this old tale. All the mediators are trained with this story of these two people at the grocery store who each reach for the last lemon on the produce stand. And then, how do you resolve? They both want the lemon. So do you just cut it in half and everybody gets half? Well, if this woman gets half of it, then she can't use the entire lemon juice for her lemonade. And if this baker, this guy, gets half of it, he can't use the whole lemon rind for his lemon meringue pie. Whereas if they just talked about why they needed the lemon in the first place, they could resolve it and both win. It would be a win-win, right? So, the woman who needed it for her lemonade could get the squeeze, and the man who needed it for his lemon meringue pie could get the rind. And that's essentially what the mediator is there for, is to talk about why do you want that lemon and what can we do to get as close to a win-win as possible.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And again, I think that story, one of the things that makes it so powerful is so much of our discourse with other people, we just think in our heads, number one, that they must absolutely know what I want. And number two, I absolutely know what they want without pressure testing either of that, right? And really understanding where the conflict or where the desire or the priority comes from. So I love that mediation can be such an effective pathway to those, again, when you're especially when you've got the space to say, I think we can get something better here. That's so great. You must love working. You must love being able to work with clients and seeing when success comes from those kind of forums.
It's so rewarding. And it's so rewarding to see, even in a contested divorce, my client from the day they walk in my office to the day that they get that judgment of divorce, it's always a transformation. And I love seeing it. They're more confident, they're happier, they're more stable. Like I said, it's so rewarding. I never thought I'd be a divorce lawyer, but seeing that and working with amazing people has just, cinched it for me.
I love that. And it's a great transition to what I want to end our conversation with, my quicksand three. I've got three questions that I ask all of my guests, and they're very much kind of tied to what surfing the quicksand is all about. And the first one is kind of related to what you just said. So I want to talk about career. If money and skill and capability and where you lived and era and time was no issue, what's another career or job you might have liked to try?
I think I would have liked to be some sort of artist. What kind of artist? I have no idea. But
But a creator and something that feels
yes.
visual. Yeah, no, that's
Yeah.
cool. Yeah. What is a technique or strategy that you use when you're avoiding something to get you unstuck to do it?
Yeah, I put on my noise canceling headphones and I put on any playlist of music. And I'm probably going to be singing and scaring everybody away from me. But I just do that to get her done, and if it's something that's not, I'm sitting down on my computer. If it's like something in the kitchen or something, I'll put on an audiobook and get it done that way.
Good. I remember I used to have it wasn't a playlist because this is long before playlists, but it must have been like a mixtape of kind of four songs that if I played them, like I'd actually clean my room if those four songs were on. And then we finally, what's something that you do to hit the reset button or recharge when life just feels chaotic?
So that's actually a marriage of both of those things, right? I'll do something creative. So I love to decorate cakes, make and decorate cakes. And so decorating a cake just makes me so happy. But it's really because I'm like creating something pretty and getting dirty. And I recently started learning how to paint in acrylics. And that has been so much fun, and it absorbs you so much that you stop thinking about the stuff that's been bothering you.
I love that you got to pull in the what else would I do with what I'm actually doing for fun on the side. And cake decorating is, not only are those, I love watching the cake decorating videos, but like at the end of the day, we get to eat cake and that's the
Yes.
best.
Yes. And you get to share it with people, right? I mean, hopefully.
Yeah. Right. You're like, listen, you're not required. You're not required, but you could share it with people. But Rebecca, thank you so much. I loved this conversation, and I feel like just navigating through kind of some of those assumptions and some of those myths and some of those reasons people resist and turning them into where are their outcomes for a good divorce, and how might you look at the positive that comes from getting unstuck and looking at the next 40 years of your life as being a space of freedom is, I know someone's listening to this today and hearing that this was just what they needed to hear. So thank you.
I hope so.
But thanks so much.
Thank you.
I learned a lot there. And from getting more details around mediation, because honestly, I didn't know how that worked, to really exploring some of those issues that do hold people back, especially some of the more kind of mental barriers that we have, things like the stigma of getting divorced, or the fear that we're not going to get what we need, or the fear that it's going to be really expensive. I really appreciated that this conversation helped kind of maybe untangle some of those ideas. As Rebecca said, just because you're thinking about your marriage in a really difficult place doesn't necessarily mean that divorce is imminent. And sometimes it's information and education and just from some perspective that helps. So if you're one of those people today that this episode really spoke to, I wish you luck in how things unfold from here. And by the way, whether that's you or that's not you, if there are things that you've been thinking about that have you stuck that you hope that I cover in Surfing the Quicksand, please make sure you head over to my website, quicksandpod.com, and drop me a note on the get in touch page and let me know what's on your mind and what I can help with in getting you unstuck.